Rod's Pulse Podcast number 22. Podcasting 101. Implications for healthcare.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back.
Hello, welcome back. As you can see, I have a little help on my podcast this time. I have a text-to-speech synthesizer to say my intro, just to have a little fun. And also, I've gotten some help from Roger Mugurdichian, who works at our library medical media services department, and he has a wonderful voice and often does voiceovers, and so he happily agreed to do my intro and my outro. So thanks a lot, Roger. The music you heard in the background while Roger was giving his intro is called On a Podcast by the band Cruise Box. I'll have a link on my show notes. Again, this has become sort of an unofficial theme for podcasters. So whenever I hear On a Podcast, I think I learned it on a podcast, and maybe you will too. So I took a little break in August. I did two podcasts in July. If you were on vacation, you might want to check them out. Rod's Pulse Podcast number 20 was called Disruptive Technologies in Education 2 and More PodSafe Vivaldi. The last one I did in July was number 21, Net Neutrality and Senator Stevens. I guess I had a little fun at, as did many newscasters and comedians, at Senator Stevens' expense. So check that out. So today I wanted to give sort of a recap of what podcasting is all about. So if you're, especially if you're new faculty or students, you want to learn more about podcasting, give it a listen. And I also talk about the impact of podcasting on healthcare, both healthcare education and patient care. So I hope you enjoy it. And so here's my episode for today. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned at the end for contact information and the complete song on a podcast. The World Wide Web of yesterday, let's call it Web 1.0. It's become a marketing must for healthcare providers and an important resource for healthcare consumers, as you probably used it yourself before you go to the doctor. And a commercial success. Look at all the wonderful companies that are that we use all the time, Amazon, and so on. During this episode, I'd like to reintroduce what I talked about once before, Web 2.0, with a special emphasis on podcasting and its potential impact on healthcare. Now, version numbers are commonly used to designate software upgrades. So Web 2.0 hints at an improved version of the World Wide Web, but it's really not a specific software upgrade. The phrase Web 2.0 was coined by O'Reilly Media about 3 years ago, and recently they attempted to copyright the phrase Web 2.0 for their annual conference on the subject, and that's a bit controversial. Web 2.0 is the, quote, participatory or read-write web, emphasizing tools and platforms that enable users to talk back. Blogs, wikis, podcasts, and even video podcasts account for an increasingly important segment of the web. The reputation of an individual can determine the success of a Web 2.0 site, not the budget of a Fortune 500 company. Look at the growing impact blogging has had on traditional news media. So-called geeks with laptops have often beaten professional journalists to the punch. If you remember back in our last presidential administration, Matt Drudge broke the news about the Monica Lewinsky story. Next to blogs, wikis are also considered a prime example of Web 2.0 technology. A wiki is a website that anyone with access to the internet can edit, correct, or improve simply by clicking the, quote, edit this page link. Wikipedia is the prime example. Wikipedia can be found at en.wikipedia.org. Now, it was created in 2001 and has grown to the largest reference website on the internet. Of course, it's free, and it's written collaboratively by experts from all around the world. Now, of course, Wikipedia is not without its detractors. Inaccurate information certainly gets inserted, but it's just as likely to be fixed in a very short order. In fact, a recent survey showed that it had fewer errors than the online Encyclopedia Britannica. Podcasting is the fastest growing Web 2.0 technology, probably because of its inherent simplicity and ease of use. Some say podcasting will become a mainstream application like the TiVo video recorders. In fact, podcasting is kind of like a TiVo for radio. Podcasting is exceeding the growth rate of the DVD, which holds the record as the fastest growing consumer entertainment technology. What is podcasting? Of course, you're listening to one now, but do you really know what goes into it and how it's produced? Podcasting involves the recording of audio programs, which are then made available for download from a website. Now, many of you are probably listening to this by clicking on the link we have on our Pulse portal website. This is a variation on the older internet radio websites, which streamed audio content. Podcast allows us to time and space shift the audio program. That is, we can download and then play the program on our portable digital audio player anytime and any place. Although the name podcasting was inspired by the iPod, you don't have to have an iPod to listen to or make podcasts. You can listen to them right on your computer, like you might be doing now, or download them to any digital music player and listen to them later. Listening, rather than watching or reading, allows us to learn while walking, exercising, riding public transit, or driving. One of the most important pieces of Web 2.0 technology involves the syndication of website content. Specifically, RSS, which stands for Really Simple Syndication, is a standardized protocol which makes a portion of a website, which we like to call a web feed, available to individual subscribers. Now, by subscribing here, I mean the technology of obtaining the content, not the cost. Most podcasts today are free and don't require a payment to subscribe. Earlier versions of RSS contributed to the rise of blogs, but it's RSS 2.0 that introduced the concept of an enclosure. An enclosure is a link to another file, in this case, for podcasts, an MP3 audio file. Web feeds allow users to capture each new episode on a site using an aggregator or a podcatcher. For podcast listeners, free software is available to automate the process of downloading, storing, and copying the audio files to a portable player. Now, Apple iTunes, you'll see the link in my show notes, is only one brand of desktop podcatcher. Another desktop application is called Juice. And there are also websites that you can configure to act as your podcatcher. You can try Yahoo, go to podcast.yahoo.com, or the new Podshow Plus, that's www.podshow.com. Again, I'll have all the links on my show notes. For podcast producers, podcast technology uses existing internet standards and freely available audio recording software. I'm happy to use Audacity, which is a free program to edit some of my audio content, and I put it all together with a program called Cast Blaster, and that only costs $50. Anyone with an internet connection and a reasonably well-equipped computer can push their audio program out to the web. Now, a lot of podcasters like me use a talk radio style. I like to keep it light and relatively short, say about 20 minutes, and include some music, as you've heard. Music is being included in podcasts such as mine, but the songs better be pod safe, and this means that they are not restricted by the copyright holder. This leaves out most of the music you normally hear on the radio. However, there are now several music services online that specialize in promoting pod-safe music. Podshow.com and Magnitude.com come to mind. Okay, who is doing the podcasting? Tech-savvy amateurs, like yours truly, including many bloggers, were the first to podcast. Now, all sorts of educational institutions are beginning to make course content available as podcasts. Professional broadcasters and syndicated radio shows are also making their content available as podcasts. One of the first ones to appear, and I still listen to it on a regular basis, is NPR's In the Media. Apple was late to the game, but gave podcasting a big boost about a year ago when they began to add podcasts to their iTunes Music Store directory. Now, if you go to iTunes and do a search for educational podcasts, you'll find links to almost 5,000 educational podcasts. Okay, how will podcasting affect healthcare? After all, that's the second half of my topic today. What I'd like to do is just read a couple of scenarios, and let's start with a student scenario. Student scenario. John had to leave his pharmacology class early to attend some urgent personal business, but he knew he could catch his professor's podcast the next morning. That night, he docked his iPod so it could charge his batteries, and while he slept, his iTunes podcatcher downloaded the previous day's lectures and several other podcasts of interest. He liked to subscribe to a sports talk show and a pop music podcast. In the morning, he grabbed his iPod and listened to the lecture he missed while riding the bus to school. Hearing the banter and questions from his fellow students and his professor's animated answers, he arrived at school feeling he hadn't missed much and was well prepared for the next lecture. Okay, that's our little student scenario. Now, here at Thomas Jefferson University, we're evaluating several commercial products that will capture lecture audio, including even the computer displays, for example, the faculty PowerPoint shows, and possibly even video, and automatically link the podcast content to the course site in our Blackboard course management system. In fact, we're putting on a pilot right now with a product called Presso Classroom, which I've talked about in the past. Several universities now, including Duke, Stanford, UC Berkeley, University of Michigan, are using iTunes U. Now, this is a free service from Apple that distributes course podcasts to their students and a subset of free podcasts to the public. So I invite you to check that out. That might be an option for schools, maybe even ours, that maybe don't have all the resources we need to distribute podcasts. Okay, here's the clinician scenario. Dr. Smith, a primary care physician, catches up with his continuing medical education, CME, while riding the R5 train in from the suburbs. He has a 15-minute walk to the station and has been using his smartphone / PDA lately instead of lugging around his heavy laptop computer. His phone has MP3 player software and he can easily store 10 hours of audio programs. While recharging his phone last night, it automatically downloaded several CME programs from his med school's alumni site. This morning, he decided to review some of the latest thinking on neurological disorders and appreciated that his video phone was able to display the PowerPoint diagrams that accompanied the audio podcast lecture. Okay, that's our clinician scenario. Podcasting seems to be a natural for continuing education, especially for busy mobile professionals. Numerous CE sites are becoming available for the mobile practitioner, and I list them on my show notes. Okay, how about a patient scenario? Martha, a 55-year-old, mildly obese mother of four, was waiting in her surgeon's office for her last consult with him before she undergoes her first angioplasty procedure. The receptionist gave her a video iPod and began to instruct her, but Martha already owned an iPod and needed little help. She learned what to expect before, during, and after the procedure. Some of the questions she had jotted down to ask her surgeon were easily answered upon reviewing the video presentation. After a brief consult with her surgeon to help clarify her remaining questions, she was allowed to take home the iPod to learn more about her risk factors and strategies for reducing them. Okay, that's our little patient scenario. Now, one of the first websites to produce extensive audio and video podcasts for patients is the Cardiovascular Multimedia Information Network of the Arizona Heart Institute, cvmd.org. Now, interestingly, its creator, cardiovascular surgeon Dr. Grayson Wheatley, who is a Jefferson Medical College graduate, class of 94, Dr. Wheatley has gained a lot of publicity as the first physician to replace magazines in his waiting room with video iPods. Listen to my interview of Dr. Wheatley on Rod's Pulse podcast number 16. These scenarios are happening today and will increase quickly as students who are already tech-savvy become tomorrow's healthcare providers and patients. Podcasting opens up new educational possibilities in a way that is easy to master both for the listener and author-producer. The new Oxford American Dictionary selected podcast as the word of the year for 2005. The public is rapidly abandoning CD players for iPods or other MP3 players and purchasing autos even with built-in jacks for the MP3 players. ubiquitous cell phone and Wi-Fi or wireless networks will also help to accelerate adoption of podcasting when content can flow directly to our players. Okay, who pays for all of these free podcasts? Many, of course, are underwritten by educational institutions and big media, but many more supported by amateurs with something to say and startup companies with venture capital. Like Web 1.0, Web 2.0's podcasting is quickly becoming a promising marketing opportunity for healthcare providers and the pharmaceutical industry, and an increasingly important educational resource for healthcare students and consumers. Although podcasting has the potential to be the ultimate marketing outlet, the advertisers have been slow to build the mechanism to help monetize podcasts, although it is happening. That will eventually make them a commercial success as well. Please stay tuned.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.